Darren, do you know how many businesses actually start in BFE?
I can't quite think of one.
Well, now you can think of one.
Really?
Because today on the show we had Ashley Dozier.
Yeah.
And she's the founder of Aniket Luxury, which is an apothecary. Did I say that right?
You got it right.
They do luxury fragrances, all kinds of stuff. What a freaking cool story.
It really was.
And her story actually starts, Darren, in?
In BFE.
Yeah, bumfuck Egypt. I know. It's pretty awesome, folks. Hope you enjoy. It's Ashley Dozier.
Thank you for calling Lunch and Go. This is Darren.
Hey, buddy. It's President Bill Clinton. How you doing?
Good, Mr. President. How you doing these days?
Doing great. Having so much fun. Hey, listen, buddy. I heard you got that Ashley Dozier coming on the show today.
Yeah, we're looking forward to talking to her.
Yeah, I heard she makes those really fancy perfumes.
She does. She does some very unique oils and scents.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Listen, I got a question for you, Darren.
Yeah.
I got a friend, and his wife, she's got a really pungent, musky smell. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, maybe you can ask her if she thinks her products can help, tame down some of that muskiness and maybe bring back a little femininity.
I'm sure she probably can. Is this friend someone close to you?
Yeah, no, it's somebody I know really well there. And I want to make sure that he can get his wife smell. I mean, right now his wife smells like kind of like a dirty raccoon or, maybe like a musky snake. And I want to make sure he can get him smelling
somebody
fancy.
Might be rolling around with too many politicians these days, that kind of friend?
No, it's just somebody I know there. Oh, shit, I got to go.
Welcome to Beer and Business. You found the best podcast for entrepreneurs. We serve crafty business knowledge, comedy, and yes, beer. And now it's time for our hosts. If he were to pat you on the back, you'd list it on your resume. It's Jake Mullins. And his beer never gets warm. It just sits there, staying frosty, waiting for him. Mr. John Winnie. And if you spell his name in Scrabble, you automatically win. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Darren Flanagan.
Folks, welcome back to Beer and Business. Today on the show, we've got Ashley Dozier. Did I say it right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. See, I did it, Darren. I said it right. Well, welcome to the show. We're really excited to hear your story.
I'm thrilled to be here and to tell it.
Well, before we get into that, and we're on pins and needles because I want to hear more, we got to talk about this beer we're drinking today, Darren, because it's a good one.
Two of them, actually. We already went through the first one.
Yeah, oops. And
people know that I don't like sours, so we brought out the little sour glasses.
Yeah, so we're drinking Lime Creek Brewing, the official beer of the Beer and Business Podcast. And so we had what we call on the show, Ashley, a primer, just to get us ready.
And
It is Ain't Fraid No Goza. It's a series. And this one is a cherry limeade.
It is good.
It's really good.
I mean, I said, I don't like sours. I like this. We were just saying this one you could sip poolside.
Oh, yeah.
Super
nice.
Finishes really light and well.
And I know you like sours, Ashley. We were talking about that before the show.
I'm a huge fan.
Darren and I are not huge fans of sours at all.
No.
And what I really like about this one is when you smell it, it's like all this, that pucker factor and your cheek starts going, you're like, oh my God, this is going to be so sour. But then it finishes really smooth. It doesn't have that real punch to it.
Now those cherries add just enough sweetness to balance out that sour. It is good.
But what we're drinking right now, Darren, made me so excited. So this is the next in the Total Consciousness series.
Yay.
It's a double IPA series, Ashley, and this one's called Number Two.
Who does Number Two work for, Darren?
That's right.
Well, he's working for me right now. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, double dry hop, New England style.
Yes.
IPA. Oh my gosh,
this is a 16-ounce can. It's an 8.5%er.
Session beer,
otherwise known as liquor. Woo! But it is so good. It really does drink like a fantastic New England IPA. Mm-hmm. It's really well set up. Nice balanced. It's a heavier IPA, but not too heavy.
No, but the more you drink from the glass, then it gets lighter.
is that how it works?
The glass gets lighter. I'm sorry.
Well, folks, we want to remind you, support Lime Creek Brewing. Go buy their beer. It's delicious. Go to the brewery, hang out. And hey, listen, if you missed the podcasting workshop that we did last week.
Shame on you.
come hang out with us next month. Yeah, and shame on them. Because, you know, they should have been there.
What are we doing next month at the brewery?
Wednesday, May 12th, Darren, mm-hmm. we are having a business networking event Ooh. From 4 to 6.
Awesome.
Now, business networking events, Darren, are great because why?
You get to meet maybe your next potential client
thanks,
or
Darren.
Referral
yes,
or
that's awesome.
All that good stuff. Your next $1 million handshake could be there.
It absolutely could. So there, we love doing networking events, Darren, and I do quite a few. But this one's at a brewery, people.
Makes it better.
Yeah, so beer makes everything better.
Just don't be a business card ninja.
Yeah, don't be one of those.
Brush up on how to network correctly before you show up.
Well, that's what makes it cool at the brewery. You just walk up, hey, what you drinking? You know, total consciousness number two. Ooh, yes, that's a delicious one. And then, you know, a great conversation and relationship starts. And Ashley, I understand you're drinking a local beer. What are you drinking?
I am. And I was going to say, you guys are over there talking about your 8%. Mine is 9.2%.
Oh my gosh. She's out drinking us. Whoa.
It's Copper Tails, a local Tampa brewery. And I'm drinking their, it's called Unholy. It's an American triple ale.
Wow.
Good stuff.
Keep drinking that. I'm going to be really interesting to see what happens at the end of the show.
Yeah, exactly. This is better and better.
Bitches.
Oh my gosh. Well, we want to thank Lion Creek for all their support. Make sure you come out to the event. If you want more information, go to the website, www.beer.business, and we would love to see you at the business networking event in May. All right, Ashley.
Yo.
So you have a premium apothecary. Is that how you say it?
Apothecary.
Apothecary. Is that?
That's it.
What is apothecary? Let's just start with that.
I know. So old school apothecaries were basically like pharmacies, but nowadays it's more thought of as what your like drugstore is. So anything that has to do with, you know, beauty, skincare, still some of that, you know, medication, fragrances, anything along those lines, especially things that are, you know, mixed. We make our like our beard oil, for example, is handmade. So it's kind of that idea of getting back to that old school handmade products.
Interesting.
And what's the name of your company?
Aniket Luxury Apothecary. Okay.
Yeah. So I appreciate you explaining that to me because, you know, I see that word and I'm like, I don't ever understand the context. And I guess it does sound a little sexier and fancier than drugstore,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
which is not For what sure. you are at all, but we'll get into that. But what Darren and I found really fascinating was your story that led to you starting a business.
It's an interesting one. I forget sometimes that that's not normal, you know, what I've done and everything. And it took a while, people saying, you know, that's really interesting what you did, for me to really realize, okay, it's pretty unique and out of the box.
So you just didn't say one day, let me start a line of hand cream and open a business. That's not how it all started, did it?
Not even a little bit.
Okay. So how did it start for you?
Well, I was actually living in Atlanta at the time, and I previously had worked, you know, at the CDC, at the University of Florida, Texas State University. I was in the public health field, loved that field. But I was also unfortunately, an abusive relationship at the time, and decided it was time to get out of that, and also time to get out of the States for a little while. So I actually put everything that I owned in storage, and I went backpacking by myself around the world for about 4 months. I was gone.
How old were you when you did that?
Let's see. This was in 2016. And since I've been 30 for almost, I don't know, a lot of years now, I will still say I was 30.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. I have the same problem. Can't seem to get past that number.
Did you just decide, you just like threw a dart on the globe and started in that spot? Or where did you land, and what made you, what did you have a sense of direction of where you were going?
No itinerary at all. However, I did know that I wanted to start in Australia. It was just, it's one of the places that's been at the top of my, you know, travel to list for a long time. And so, I had some things that I had to take care of in the States before I could leave. And so I actually flew out to California and hung out there for a couple weeks, while I was kind of finishing up, you know, any business in the States. And then, cause I figured, you know, being on the West Coast would mean a lot easier flight to Australia. So as soon as I, you know, finished up what I needed to do, I booked a one-way ticket to Australia.
Wow. So I want to rewind a little bit. You were in this terrible relationship. Did it just come to you one day that you just needed to get away? Like, where did the idea of just, you know, packing a backpack and just going, where did that come from?
Well, you know, at the time, I've always been, you know, bitten by the travel bug. I've always been a big traveler. I'd been to Europe a couple times already. I had lived abroad, you know, during school, college years. And so I had always had that urge to go travel as much as I could. And being in kind of trapped in that relationship the way I was and not feeling much freedom for so long, I realized it was kind of the perfect time. We, you know, had owned a business and a house together, and I had enough in savings that, you know, I could pass off the house and the business and everything and just kind of get out of that situation, and didn't have a lot of other responsibilities at the time. So no mortgage payment, you know, no work, you know, job I had to be at every day, meant that I had the freedom to actually go wander around for a little while. And so it just kind of, you know, serendipity felt like it was just the right time to head out and get a lot of those travels under my belt.
Okay. So you knew you wanted to start in Australia. Tell us some details about your journey. Did you have, you know, hotel rooms set up in advance, or did you literally just hop on the plane and say, let's see what the hell happens?
It was mostly, let's see what the hell happens. And looking back, I'm like, God, what a fucking idiot sometimes.
But, awesome. You know,
I don't recommend having no plans at all.
Maybe they'll have hostels I can stay in somewhere.
That's what I did. You know, I was told by so many people that hostels were the way to go because you would meet other people while you're traveling, and you could choose, you know, whether you wanted, you can even get a private room in a hostel, but whether you wanted to be in a, you know, room with a few people, a lot of people, you know, same sex or co-ed or so it really, I was like, you know what, I will give it a try. I've never done this hostel thing before, but we'll give it a try because if it means I get to meet other people, like that was, you know, definitely part of the goal was to like meet new people, discover new cultures and everything along the way. So what I would mostly do was wherever I was going next, I would look up, I had an app for hostels. I would look up, you know, a hostel in the city and just pick one and just book that first night. And then that way I could at least get there, only have one night booked. So if the place was horrible, I could move the next day. If it was great, I would stay for a few more nights.
Wow. Interesting. So where all did you go? You started in Australia. Where else did your travels take you?
So, I did 12 countries total during that time. I hopped around a whole lot. Started in Australia, obviously had to jump over to New Zealand because it was right there. Mm-hmm. And then Egypt was next on my list, but I found out that you could do a long layover basically on your way to Egypt. And so I decided that a stop in Singapore was, you know, a cool idea. So I went there too. And then went to Egypt.
Expensive one too.
Yeah, that's not a cheap place to go. Nope. But, you know, a long layover or a short stay there was kind of perfect. I got to see most of the city and, you know, experience it, but without a whole lot of cost.
Yeah. So Singapore, where else did you go?
So next up was Egypt. Was there for a couple of weeks and then went to Europe and bounced all over Europe before I had to be back in the States because I had a like a conference out in Vegas that I had to get back to. So I had to come back eventually. But I definitely took as much time, you know, while I was over there and took people's advice as I was traveling. You know, where should I go next? What should I do while I'm here? Is there anything, you know, that I have to see? What do tourists always see? And people are like, that wasn't necessary. And so I really took that advice while I was, you know, wandering around. And I'd have to say that, you know, the whole reason I started this business was just all because of some advice that happened while I was in Cairo in Egypt. And, you know, I was only going to go to Cairo while I was in Egypt. That was I just didn't really think far beyond that because, like I said, didn't plan.
Sure.
But somebody said, are you doing a cruise down the Nile River? And I said, well, I hadn't planned on it. I was only going to be in Egypt for, you know, 3, 4, 5 days. And they said, you have to go do a cruise down the Nile River. That's where, you know, the Valley of Kings. So all the tombs are, that's where mm-hmm. the really cool temples are. They're like, that's where everything is. You have to do it.
And I'm sure you read The Heart of Darkness. So there's that, right?
All kinds of cool things. I mean, I wish I could, looking back, I wish I would have, you know, taken more notes in my journal and even more photos and everything, because Egypt, I rave about it all the time because there's just no other culture like it. It's so cool, their history.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing.
You travel over there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cairo.
You like that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really, and the food. Oh.
Better than Singapore? Oh,
so good.
Yes. Better than Singapore. Definitely. Although the Great Pyramids are a bit of a letdown because you look across the street and there's McDonald's and Dirty City. you never see that in the photos.
No.
Yeah. So. You're not totally wrong on that one, but that's why they said you got to do the cruise.
Yeah. I never did that. That's awesome. So what was the advice that you got when you were in Egypt that led you to wanting to start a business?
So while I was on that cruise, my Egyptologist for the day, or my guide, you know, for the day, I shouldn't say it was advice. It was just a question. He said, you know, well, after we went and saw the temples, he said, hey, do you want to stop in a little perfumery on the way back to the ship? And I said, sure, why not? You know, his suggestion of somewhere cool to stop. And because that's such a big part of Egyptian culture, fragrances and oils and everything have been part of their beauty regimens for thousands of years. And so I was like, yeah, sure. Let's stop in and see what they've got.
And he gets a kickback for every guest that he brings into the shop, but he probably didn't tell you that.
100%, I'm sure. But you know what? I'm so thankful that he did that. Cause even it is true that, you know, yes, that's part of the deal over there. You know, he gets a kickback, but, even some of the other ports that I was in, I went to, you know, an alabaster factory, and a papyrus factory where they showed how they made paper and everything. And even though, again, some of it's a little bit touristy, they get a kickback, whatever. It is getting you a little bit more kind of hands-on and being able to see just kind of a different side of the culture, mm-hmm. and getting to the chance to purchase products or items that are very Egyptian, you know, instead of your typical little like tourist shop.
Yeah.
These are things that are, you know, are handmade there by them.
Right. Now, before we hit the perfumery, it's a hard word to say. Did you find this whole trek that you went on for 4 months, was it very, really cathartic for you? Did that help you process everything that you had left behind, the relationship that you had gotten out of, and were you able to, you know, move forward?
Yeah. I mean, everyone calls it something different. Like some of my friends joke that it was my eat, pray, love moment. And, you know, I always just call it my travels, and some people are, you know, everyone kind of has a different name for this, but yeah, I mean, it truly was to have to figure out by yourself, you know, where you're going in all these different countries and rely on, you know, yourself and your instincts and everything. It really was very cathartic. And, you know, I say all the time that it saved my life because it really let me become me again and realize, you know, who I was away from everything that I had been through in, you know, the 6 years prior to that. Mm-hmm. So it really, yeah, I mean, it's as cheesy as it sounds, I know, but I did find myself again. Like you really do realize who you are when you're in a foreign country and nobody knows who you are. You get to just be you.
Yeah. So I've done a lot of international travel for business, and I've traveled all over the world. I did like 65 countries, but one of the most interesting experiences that I've had, and I'm going somewhere with this, so for you listeners, relax, I'm going to land the plane. I did. I promise this is going somewhere. I did a backpack trip a few years ago, and I was at the time, I think I was 41, 42. I can't remember exactly. I think it was getting ready to turn 42.
Okay.
And, you know, I was at this point in my life, Ashley, very happy, kids, you know, I'm not, there wasn't any stress that was leading me to it, but it was me and a couple of buddies. We were going to go to Europe, and I wanted to watch a Formula One race, and we decided no plans. Let's just, you know, pack a backpack, nothing more than a backpack. And we don't even know where we're going to stay. We know that we're going to go to the race, but other than that, no idea where the hell we're going to go, which countries, whatever. We were there for 9 days.
You had one plan. You knew that. Well, you were going to drink beer.
I had to go to the race and drink beer. Yes, of course. So. drink my way across Europe is what we talked about. But seriously, we had no idea how we would get from country to country, whether we'd rent cars, do trains, whatever. And it was one of the, it was just a really, it was a great experience. Mm-hmm. It really was, because I found myself more present in the moment traveling than I'd ever been before, because we literally hit the ground in Europe after the, you know, long 10-hour flight, whatever. And we're like, okay, now what? Where are we going to stay tonight?
Point that way and let's go.
And, you know, we started in Belgium and we ended up going to Germany and then Netherlands. And it was just a really cool trip because we literally every day, like, what are we going to do today? Where are we going to go? You know, maybe we should go to Germany today. It's like you wake up and you're like, maybe we go to Germany today. And I only did this for 9 days and it was just an amazing experience. Can't imagine doing it for 4 months. I've never had that opportunity. I never had that window of opportunity after I had money. So it's like,
well, it doesn't take a lot to backpack and do the hostels and stay and pray. And
we didn't do any hostels.
Anybody. Yeah.
Well, I mean, because
you're a little older.
If you're Darren, take it. If you're Darren and you want to do hostels and they're like, you want same sex hostel? It's like, I don't see any quick and disappointed. So, sorry.
I
had to do it. Anyways,
that are in hostels, you would be amazed. It's like, you know,
it is the same sex Darren place.
They do have public showers here. You could bathe.
Yes.
It's a lot of different body odors from around the world in one closed room.
No, but seriously, I told you I was going to land a plane. This is where I'm going with it. So you had this experience, Ashley, for 4 months and it was, you know, changed your life, saved your life. I did it for 9 days and it didn't save my life or change it, but it was an experience that really opened my eyes. And you're talking to a guy that had been traveling internationally for years. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody should do this. Take a trip where you literally don't know where you're going to go, where you're going to stay. It will open your eyes to things. And it's an awesome experience. You should do it.
It really is. Yeah. That's always my number one, you know, when people ask what's just your number one piece of advice in general, travel. It always has been my, you know, get out there, see other cultures, see the world. You know, if you are the kind that it's scary to not have any kind of plan, make some plans. You know, I mean, I was a female traveling alone, so I made sure I at least had a place to stay, you know, my first night in a new country. I, you know, looked at the reviews for the hostels and, I tended to try to pick the ones that had a bathroom attached to your room instead of the bathroom down the hallway that you're sharing with, you know, 40 people.
Let me make a little comparison. So I kind of illustrate this point and then we'll move on. But if I compare this to like a vacation I went on, like a cruise, I've been on cruises before where it's an amazing experience. You go to these different countries. You got the itinerary with your excursions and you do all these really cool things and you get through a 7 day or a 10 day cruise. I mean, it's over in a blink of an eye.
Yep.
You're like, what the hell happened? And you're tired as hell.
Exhausted.
Because you're like, holy shit. You did a lot of cool things, but it was, I don't know. It's just so different because when I went over there for 9 days, I saw things and I did things that I typically wouldn't do when I travel. And it helped me experience the country and the people in a way that I just hadn't done before. And I thought that was really cool.
I agree. And I think that's what, you know, some of the coolest parts of my trip were definitely the ones that people recommended things at the last minute, you know, or said, you really should go do this. Like when I was in Australia, you know, a friend of mine from high school just happened to be living there. You know, she moved to Australia and she said, well, do you plan on going to the Whitsundays? And I said, I have no idea. I wanted to, you know, go see the Great Barrier Reef somehow. And she said, well, you obviously have to do a sailboat through the Whitsundays. And I said, okay. And so I booked a weekend sailboat cruise, you know, through the Whitsundays, which are just the most stunning islands you've ever seen and rated the number one beach in the world, you know, numerous times. And, I wouldn't have done that, you know, had I not just asked people there, you know, what to do. And so it's definitely, The same thing with, you know, I'll bring it full circle for you. The same thing with, you know, the cruise down the Nile River. I wouldn't have done it had I not been there and somebody said, you really need to go do that. And I definitely would have never ended up in that perfumery had my guide not said, hey, do you want to stop here on the way to the, back to the boat?
All right. So perfect segue. So let's go back to the perfumery. This is kind of the genesis of you starting your business. So tell us about what happened when you went in there and how was that this big motivating force for what you ended up doing?
Well, I should say to start out that I had no idea walking in there that I would ever own a business in any way related to this. I went in just with the thought of finding some, you know, gorgeous perfumes or oils for myself. They started by bringing out eucalyptus and lavender and things that, you know, we know really well and are used to and are beautiful. And I really enjoy. But my thought was, you know, I can get these at home and that's not why I'm traveling. You know, I'm not traveling to experience anything that I can experience at home. And so I asked, do you have anything that's more regional that is, you know, only from here that, you know, I'm not gonna be able to find anywhere else. And, they brought out papyrus oil. And I will tell you my just initial reaction. I can still remember it, you know, to this day, 5 years later, of sitting in that little perfumery and smelling papyrus oil for the first time and just being like, holy shit, what is this? And just being, you know, kind of hit in the face with this, like, why do most perfumes not smell like this? Like, this is incredible. And I loved it. I bought four, you know, as big of jars as I could get that I could ship home to myself because I clearly didn't want to carry them around in, you know, my backpack with me for another 2 months. So I shipped them back home. And when I got back to the States, I started wearing it all the time. And, you know, being in that little perfumery, like I said, I had no idea that this was going to turn into anything, but I just really found something that I personally loved. Something that was very unique to that region. And I bought it for myself.
And so I've never smelled papyrus oil.
Most people haven't.
I didn't even
don't have a clue.
I didn't even know papyrus had an oil.
I thought it was just paper.
Yeah. Like, how is it made? Do you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've obviously learned a lot about it since then, but I asked them, you know, okay, so how do you guys, what are these oils? Like, where are they coming from? That kind of thing. And just like, you know, eucalyptus oil or, you know, any of these other essential oils that are coming from plants, they use a cold pressed method and they just press out the oil from the plants. And so while papyrus, yes, most people absolutely think of paper and, you know, the reeds were even used for making boats and shoes and all kinds of things in ancient Egypt. But papyrus oil has been made for thousands of years in Egypt as well. And it's something that they believe Cleopatra used in her beauty routine. And it was used as an aphrodisiac and, you know, just a fragrance for men and women. And it just never made its way to the U.S. It's just one of those things that most people have never smelled unless they've been in that area. And I thought that was a very unfortunate thing for people to never get to experience it. Because the reactions that I was getting from it when I was back in the States wearing it all the time and people, you know, were like, what are you wearing? What is that? A lot of questions about it. My favorite story to tell that really probably sparked the business, me actually turning this into a business was that, I was at it was kind of a college reunion that a lot of my friends did every year. We did a Christmas party together, you know, a holiday party where we have a white elephant gift exchange. And I had just gotten back from my travels like 2 years prior. And I still had a little bit of papyrus oil left. And so I put some in a pretty little bottle and wrapped it up and put it under the tree. And that was the hottest gift that year in the white elephant gift exchange.
You caused some fist fights at Christmas.
I'm talking. Girls were fighting over it. Like, one girl had her boyfriend steal it from another girl
because start taking their earrings off. Oh no, you didn't, bitch.
Yeah, I mean, it was hysterical. Like, and so afterwards, you know, the person who won it, she was like all excited, and the other four girls that were pissed off came up to me afterwards and they were like, if you have any more of that, we'll buy some from you.
Ding 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 ding. Wait a minute.
I mean, that was it. That was the light bulb moment of, you know, like, people really do like this. It's not just me. This isn't just, you know, my imagination that this is something incredible, but, you know, maybe there's something here.
So that was the moment for you that you thought maybe there's a business opportunity?
That was it. Because I realized, you know, I was like, I really don't have a lot left. I was like, I have a tiny bit left at home. I can see what I have that maybe I can, you know, give to your Celia. But I said, but let me, you know, I'll go online and maybe try and find more. Well, I mean, if you search papyrus oil online, well, now all you're going to find is me, because it's just not available anywhere else in the U.S. And I was so disappointed by that, because I was like, you know, I wanted more just for me. And I realized that you can't get it anywhere else. The only place I even saw it sort of was somewhere in Australia, but they didn't ship. It was just, they were talking about how they had it somewhere. And I just couldn't get any more. And so I said, you know what? I remember the name of that little tiny perfumery that I stopped at, and let me start doing some digging. And I dug until I found a WhatsApp phone number for this perfumery. And that's how it started.
So let me kind of back up a little bit, right? So when you came back from your 4-month trip, you had some conference to go to. Was your plan, did you go back into the health industry?
I didn't. I had had at the time a franchise, or, you know, a business with a multi-level marketing company, a skincare company that I had on the side for a while, and loved that business just because clearly I love, you know, the beauty industry. But I went, that was the conference that I was going to. And so I was no longer in the public health field. The reason I was able to travel and still make an income, you know, was because of that business at the time. I had enough, you know, like I said, in savings and that, you know, coming in from that, you know, I was able to kind of take those 4 months off and go travel and do what I needed to do. But I was still, you know, attempting to put effort into that business, once I got back from traveling. So I had to be out in Vegas, you know, soon after I got back, which was not a bad way to have to come back to the States.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds good to me. So you were doing that when this idea kind of sparked in you to look into this oil, this perfume business, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you found a WhatsApp number.
Yeah.
And I assume you called them. And how did this whole thing start to unfold?
I messaged them. Because I figured at least if they don't speak English, they can copy and paste it into a translator.
Little Google Translate. I've used it many times overseas.
Oh, many times, because mm-hmm. I clearly don't speak Arabic. And so I messaged them and I just said, hi, I had visited your perfumery like 2 years ago and I loved the papyrus oil. You know, do you ship overseas? And they're like, you know, and I said, well, we need to figure out a way, because I need more of it. And I wanted to, you know, buy a little more than just for me, just to sell a little bit of it to friends and people that had asked me about it. And that kind of, you know, I never thought of it turning into a huge business, but at least, you know, something on the side selling this. And so, I just started conversations with them, and, you know, Egypt is not a first world country, and they do not have all the systems in place like we do, you know, to simply send money and receive mm-hmm. shipments and everything. So it took me probably almost a year to actually get that system in place where I could even do business with them overseas.
So you had to go and you had to figure out how to do the exports and imports and
find your own pack mail store.
Yeah. Which is very complicated. I don't think a lot of people realize how much goes into, you know, exports and imports if you're going to do a business like this.
Especially, yeah, when you're trying to set up port to port and how it's got to, then it's in holding when it gets there and, oh gosh, who you
going to
pay off? And
especially whenever the shipment, you know, the return address literally says on it, remote location, Egypt. Like, do you remember BFE when you were growing up? Do you know what that stands for?
Bumfucked Egypt.
This is where this is coming from. I mean,
it's literally coming from bumfucked Egypt.
It literally, this is BFE.
I love the BFE oil. It's awesome.
I'm telling you, like, remote location Egypt. I laughed forever when I got that first package and that was the return address. I was like, well, No wonder this was such a mess to, you know, get started.
Oh my God. I could just see the guys in customs, like listening to the box. Do you hear any ticking? No.
They got those beetles in there. What are the, or the
drug sniffing dog goes up and starts sniffing the box and then starts humping somebody's leg. I don't think
somebody
it's a bomb.
He opens it and, you know, a mummy comes flying out. Like, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
She did say it's an aphrodisiac. I mean, it probably does work on dogs as well.
Sure. So. I've got this image in my mind now that I can't get out.
Hold boy. So that's your first shipment. You get it in and you quell the masses, the immediate masses of your circle of friends. I'm sure they were the first ones.
Oh yeah.
So the inner circle fighting stopped.
So was this just in the beginning? Was this just an effort for you to import this this papyrus oil and resell it, or were you thinking longer term and bigger where your business ultimately ended up?
I think I was thinking very selfishly that I wanted to continue wearing it. And for the amount that it costs to ship it over here, I would have to at least sell some of it to make it worth it. So it was, I have to admit, it was a very, very selfish, you know, business to start. But no, I really didn't think too much of it from the beginning. I definitely, you know, it was more of just a, I'll just sell it, you know, however I can on, you know, via social media and things. And, it went so well just with that first bottle that I, you know, got in and sold so quickly that I really said, okay, this is, I can actually do this. Like I can turn this into something, and started to actually create a brand around it, you know, rather than just it being just papyrus oil, I started to create Anikit.
That was my next question is when did the brand come into this? So
what does it smell? What does papyrus oil smell like? I mean, is it earthy? Is it pungent like a patchouli? Is it more like a rose, what, sandalwood? A little eucalyptus? I mean, how do you describe this?
I know. This is probably the hardest question that I get because it's like trying to describe to somebody what a banana tastes like. Like, you know, if you haven't tasted it or you haven't smelled it, it's hard to really describe it because it's weird to say, but it's such a unique scent. Yet people often say whenever they smell it that it smells very familiar. And that's where that, like the aphrodisiac and the pheromone side come into it, is that that's why it smells familiar.
Okay.
But I like to try to describe it as a crisp, clean scent with a tiny bit of musk behind it. So if you don't like musk, don't worry. I have people that hate musk but still love papyrus. I have people that love musk, that love papyrus, even though it's very, you know, kind of clean and fresh smelling. So it's kind of, it's hard to say that it smells much like anything else in particular, because it really does have its own unique scent. But I have found that it is very universally appealing. I have had very, very few people ever smell it and just be like, it's not for me. Usually, you know, one of my favorite things to do is at our pop-up markets to hand people, you know, a sample of it and watch their face, because it's, people are just surprised by, you know, the feeling they get from it.
It smells sexy, Darren.
Mm. It does.
That's
there
it.
You go.
How about that? That's, you know.
Sounds like it.
I mean,
sounds
I'm interested. Like I want to smell it now. Listener to it.
Well, there's part one. Part one is smelling it. Part two is when it actually makes contact with your body and the chemicals from your body and the chemicals from the oils or cologne change it. Does it change the scent that much, or does it maintain that natural fragrance?
It's interesting because you can still tell that it's papyrus oil, you know, whoever it's on. Mm-hmm. But it does. I mean, I was at a girls' night one time, you know, we were passing it around, the girls were all putting it on, and it was funny. We were smelling it on each other's wrists because we were saying, wait a second, like, how does it smell so sweet on you, but on somebody else, that musk kind of scent came out more because of, you know, their body chemistry. And
my God, Rebecca, so you smell like shit.
Doesn't smell like just musk. She smells like an ox musk. Holy cow.
Does anybody else smell a donkey? Am I the only one smelling this?
It's an Egyptian donkey, though.
That person was kicked out of the party.
It's a BFE donkey. Sorry. We're on our best behavior. Promise.
No, so we're okay. Now, Anikit is born. Now you're establishing a brand. Mm-hmm. So you have this name, Anikit.
Yeah. What does Anikit mean?
Yeah, so it took me a while to
remote
figure
center
out
location.
A name. You know, like that's one of those things that...
it translates in Arabic to the middle of fucking nowhere.
I mean, you're not totally off base. It actually, Anakit was the goddess of the Nile River.
Okay.
So she was the... Not only was she the goddess of the Nile, she was also the goddess of lust. Mm. But she was the person that, or the god that they thought helped to basically feed the Nile whenever the Nile would flood every year, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of Egypt, mm-hmm. you know, the Nile would flood. But it took me a long time to come up with a name, but I really, when I started to like read about her and just some of that, the fact that papyrus comes from the Nile and has always been called the gift of the Nile, it just kind of clicked and felt right that, you know, I give kind of a nod back to the Egyptian culture and to Anakit because she was the goddess of the Nile. So I really liked that it was a unique name, but if you, you know, search Anakit, you can still find things. So it's not like it's, you know, I didn't make it up. It was, you know, a true goddess that they worshipped, and it just seemed like a cool way to honor, you know, the Egyptians for their contribution of the papyrus oil.
I actually really like, I think that's great.
Great name.
It's funny. So the two breweries that have been, you know, official beers of this podcast, their names came from, you know, like Line Creek. It's right next to Line Creek and, you know, Jailhouse Brewing, our first love. They were in an old jailhouse. And I love when people use a brand that pays homage to where it comes from, where it starts. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's talk business. So you started
Which
by...
Which one do you want to talk about?
What's that?
What business do you want to talk about?
Anakit.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Sake.
I got a podcast with
Make
the
Make sure we're still
actually
on the same page here.
So you started by just... buying this this oil and then reselling it, I assume in their packaging, but
nope.
You did your own packaging?
I did my own packaging. The way I purchased it and the way they sell it are just in like large bottles, mm-hmm. Or large, you know, they send it to me in huge jugs. I have to hand bottle and repackage into, you know, these smaller usable packaging. So they're little roll-on, you know, glass, little roll-on bottles so you can actually get it on your skin easily.
So you're building a little overhead here now.
Yeah.
Tiny bit. Yeah.
So when you started the brand and you started to think about this as a more legitimate opportunity, a longer term business, mm-hmm. you know, I assume you started to branch out with other fragrances and were these things that, you know, were you mixing oil or were you just, you know, finding things that you liked and then, you know, putting them in different containers and rebranding it? Like, how did you go from where you started to where your business is now operating today?
Yeah. So it was just, you know, papyrus oil to start. That was our flagship product, our signature scent. And that's all we had in the very beginning. And I realized that, you know, I've got to expand a little bit beyond that. And especially if I'm going to turn this into, you know, a website, because nobody's searching for papyrus oil. People don't know about it. So I've got to have other things that people are going to be looking for and other ways to kind of describe what I'm selling. And I didn't want to talk about it as essential oils, because even though it is an essential oil, it's not used like your typical, you know, most people use essential oils for aromatherapy or for medicinal, you know, purposes. And this really is a fragrance.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it took me a while to kind of figure out how to frame it. Mm-hmm. But I also had them send me a few other samples of some of the other, you know, fragrances that they had and decided, you know, picked five other ones so that we now have a total of six fragrances and they all come from the same perfumery. You know, I'm steadfast on that they're single origin. And so I really just picked what I liked. So we then had six fragrances and I was, you know, bottling them myself and they're hand bottled. And I started selling them as, you know, just these little roll-on bottles of all these different, you know, fragrance options that were all natural, cruelty-free, you know, all the buzzwords right now, all the things that people are looking for, though, that, you know, are a little more transparent about ingredients and what's in people's products and where they're coming from.
This sounds like it's still a side hustle at this point.
I had created the brand at that point, so it was Anikit. We started off with the name Anikit Luxury Oils, since I was just, you know, those oils. But I did start to actually create the business at that point. I did all the branding myself and created, you know, a full brand. I love to talk about branding and help people with branding because it's just one of my favorite things to do in the business world. And create, you know, the personality of a brand and kind of the feel and, you know, go beyond just like colors and logo. So I did all of that myself and created a Shopify website. And
that's a, you know, lot of fun.
Oh, Shopify, I am forever grateful to them because I am not tech savvy, you know, in that way. And so the fact that I was able to create an entire, you know, company website, like this entire brand website, myself was, I did everything myself in the beginning. I bootstrapped the entire business. And so it was really cool to have my hands in all of this and be able to create my own website, create my own branding, start our social media accounts and those kind of things. And really, yeah, start to turn it into, you know, a brand and a business.
So you've got, at this point, you've got five oils, right?
Six
oils total. Are you all in at that point? Like when you went to six oils, was it like, there's nothing else on my plate. This is my business and I'm going feet first and here we go.
Yeah, for the most part, I still had, my other business. It's one of those businesses that it's, you know, I take care of the customers that I have, but I wasn't actively growing it anymore.
Right.
And so it's kind of a residual, you know, income at that point. So I still had that, which was, you know, a little safety net. And, I was, you know, building this business from home by myself. And my best friend told me, she lived, out in California. And she told me, she was like, I swear, if you don't go get a part-time job somewhere and get out of your house sometimes, I'm going to murder you. because
that's
I think
what friends
I was
are for
her crazy. I was going crazy being at home all the time, working from home, not, you know, getting up and getting dressed or interacting with people or anything. And so, I did go get a part-time job just to, you know, get myself out of the house and have somewhere to go and something easy that I, you know, you just show up, do your job and go home. And I loved what I was doing, because it was very flexible.
Working as a Walmart greeter is a great thing. You want a basket or a cart? Which one?
You want fries with that?
Oh, Lord.
So
okay, nothing like that, okay. But
yeah, don't listen to Darren. Darren's an idiot. So, so when did you launch your first Shopify website? What year was that?
2019.
Okay. So you launched the website. How did things go after you launched it?
Really well. I was definitely impressed by how supportive my network was. You know, I've grown a pretty big network. I'm clearly an extrovert and love to meet new people and everything and have lived in, you know, multiple states and countries. And so I have a great network that, you know, I was able to kind of tap into and just be like, hey guys, I'm doing this thing. If you're interested, I would love for you to pay attention to it. And so, you know, the first time it went up and my little, you know, grand opening online and everything, it went really well. And I was able to immediately, you know, take that money and reinvest back into the business and continue to buy more oils and upgrade our packaging and, you know, start to do kind of all the next steps of continuing to make it, you know, a little bit bigger and a little bit better each time I kind of, you know, went back to the drawing board.
So you were doing all your own, do you still do it? I guess you're all your own pack and ship or was that?
I do. Right now I do. We're in the process of looking into, you know, a way to have a co-packer or somebody take over that process. But right at the moment I am still doing it. I still wear most of the hats in my business, but I do have a marketing team, that takes care of that side of things.
Yeah. You can only scale so far when you're doing the work yourself. At some point you got to figure out how to how to offload some of those things and lean into companies that have scale and have the ability to replicate. Because it sounds to me like you're on track to do some really special things.
So you, yeah, thank you. My gosh, you did your own e-commerce site, and your website. Obviously, you got to know a little bit about SEO to drive mm-hmm. people or for people to find you and figure out why they want to find you. Mm-hmm. So you've handled
if I,
that.
If I go on Google and mm-hmm. I search for bumfucked Egypt, does Anakit come up?
Anakit comes up.
Because if you have not figured out how to make that work, that's your next wave of growth.
You are not wrong. Thank you for that. Here I am. This whole time thinking, because I have accomplished one thing, that if you go and search for papyrus oil, I mm-hmm. am the first thing that comes up.
Good for you.
So I have accomplished that, but man, now you just make me feel like a failure because I haven't gotten BFE, linked back to me yet.
Number one search for what does BFE mean? And Anakit Luxury comes up as number one.
It means you need to smell good, motherfucker.
Yep, I like it.
So you mentioned in the beginning of the show that you have beard oil. So obviously you've kind of branched out into other products. I mean, do you milk the beard yourself to get
that's
the oil out?
Yeah. That's her latest one, I think, is the beard oil. She's had.
I want to try it. Both Darren and I have. It's a little bit beyond 5 o'clock shadows. I think we need to moisturize, so we're going to be trying that out. But what other products are you making now?
So we've expanded. We have 4 lines now, product lines. Our personal care or personal fragrances are still there. Those are our 6 fragrances that we've had since the beginning. Our self-care line, that's the beard oil. We did a collaboration with a hair care company, and they set up or created the hair oil, and we infused it with papyrus. Mm-hmm. So it's a hair fragrance, but it also actually nourishes the hair. So we did one of those. We have the number one product of 2020, hand sanitizer.
Of course,
infused with papyrus as well. So it smells delicious.
It doesn't smell like a fucking hospital, like half the shit I've been using.
See, exactly. Mm.
So hand sanitizer you actually want to use. I like that.
I know. And then what else? We just recently launched our accessories line. So we actually did a collaboration with a jewelry line, a demi-fine jewelry line. And all of the jewelry, you can actually wear your fragrance on the jewelry because there's porous rock or porous stone on each of the pieces. So.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So we have earrings and necklaces and bracelets for women. And then we also have beaded bracelets for men. And so we just launched all of that recently, and that did really well. And then our next thing that we have started to do kind of in person or do consulting for events and such is like home fragrances or fragrances at events. So like scentscapes and fragrance atmospheres at events and home fragrance so that you have like diffusers. And in production right now, we have some candles and linen sprays and those kind of things.
That is really interesting. So, have you ever stayed at you've traveled abroad. Have you ever stayed at a Shangri-La? Oh,
yeah. At a where?
At a Shangri-La.
No, I haven't.
So they're all across Asia. They're a very prominent hotel chain.
Okay.
And they have a fragrance. Mm-hmm. And no matter if you're in Korea or Manila or it's in China, it doesn't matter where you're at. If you walk into a Shang, it smells the same. And I got to tell you, it's actually really interesting. She's bringing this up. One of the things that I loved about staying at the Shang is you travel a lot of times I travel to cities. Maybe I've been there before. Maybe it's first time. But you're, half a world away from your family. You're tired because you've been traveling in a metal tube for 24 hours. And you walk in and you smell familiarity. And mm-hmm. it's one of those feelings, like it would invoke something in me. Like I'd walk in, it's like, I'm here. And mm-hmm. I don't know, there's just that smell did something. And smell is so powerful. Mm-hmm. You ever smell something, Darren, and like it takes you back to the most vivid memory?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
It's amazing.
That's one thing that we talk about for sure on our website.
Yeah.
Is it how scent is our sensory, our sense that is most tied to memory.
Mm-hmm.
So having, like you said, a lot of it's very, very popular now for upscale, hotels and spas to have like a signature scent.
The casinos.
Yeah, they do.
Well, I mean, at the Mirage, you go to the Mirage and they've got that tropical. It's almost like a coconutty pineapple, almost like a Mai Tai smell. And it's like, that smells good.
That's really interesting. Yeah, scent is so powerful. It's like, you know, you can smell a perfume and like Darren will be like, oh my God, I remember back in high school. I remember the minute she signed that restraining order where I was.
My first one that it was ever.
God, I remember what I was wearing.
The guy who served it to me. I remember the cologne he was wearing.
I remember he was wearing Dolce & Gabbana glasses and had a really nice fade.
He's wearing that polo cologne. I had a girlfriend in high school. That's what her dad like doused himself in. You know,
the green bottle.
Yeah, the green bottle. And I mean, you just get in his car and the whole car just, it was just
like one of the worst colognes ever. How did that ever get popular?
I have no clue.
Hey, I got an idea. Let's make a cologne that smells like shit.
Yeah.
And men will love it.
Polo, let me see. It smells like horse sweat. But
wait a minute. We'll charge $90 a bottle for it, and then people will think it smells good. I do not get that one.
No.
Never did.
I'd rather wear Stetson.
Hey, I don't mind Stetson. I think it smells pretty good.
I'm so sorry.
I'm not too proud to say like Brut's a pretty decent smelling cologne. I don't wear it. First one
you got, you know, when you were in your teens, it's like, here's your first cologne, you know, stocking stuffer.
Well, you know what's funny is I was joking about Brut. Brut actually smells really good. But you never wanted to be the guy like, oh, you wear the $9 cologne. I know it smells good, but fuck, dude, that's all you could do?
I'd rather be wearing Old Spice instead of Brut. Come on.
A little high karate. Oh, my gosh. Sorry, you totally got us on a tangent, but I think that's really interesting, the eventscape thing. That's really cool.
Pumping a certain scent for an event, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's cool. People are starting to realize, you know, I've done like fashion shows, charity events, and you know, weddings are people love this idea of having like a signature scent at their wedding. It's cool. It's cool to be a part of somebody's day like that, or to really, you know, at an event, somebody walks in the door and they're like, whoa, what is that?
I actually think that's really brilliant, because going back to, I mean, we're joking about it, but going back to that, it's like, if you had a signature scent at the wedding, you know, it's such a powerful day. Imagine like you smell something that smells like that signature scent in the future. And, you know, already that event's burned into your brain, but then you add that olfactory, you know, connection to it. And it would probably bring back more vivid memories than without.
Hopefully good ones.
Well, it depends on how the relationship's going.
Shitty divorce afterwards. And every time you smell that scent, you just raged.
I remember exactly where I was when I gave up half.
Right. It's a whole new kind of therapy that you go see a therapist. I'm an aromatherapist.
Yes.
I'll help you forget that scent.
Please. Yeah. But that's awesome. So have you guys actually started doing that yet?
What, aromatherapist?
The scentscapes and stuff. That's something that we've started doing kind of on the backside. Haven't done it publicly too much yet. I haven't advertised, you know, publicly that we're doing it too much yet. But we have started doing it. And so just to kind of, you know, experiment and get ideas of the best ways to do it. And so far they've turned out phenomenal, to the point you guys will love this at the fashion show that I did, in the restrooms, we put, you know, a bowl of a porous rock called selenite, selenite crystals. And we had the selenite crystals in there. And then you just drop a little bit of the fragrance oil on top of it. And it works as a diffuser to, you know, make the room smell good. And I, at the end of the night, was talking to a group of ladies that, you know, once they realized that I was the one that owned, you know, the fragrance company that, you know, did all of this, the girl started laughing so hard to herself. And I said, what's going on? And she pulls a couple rocks, a couple crystals of selenite out of her bra. She said, it smelled so good, I wanted to take some with me to like figure out what it was.
How cruel of you. It smelled like food, and I haven't eaten in 3 weeks.
And we laughed. I laughed so hard. She like tried to hand it back to me. And I'm like, no, you keep it. You keep it. Like,
it's been in your bra. It's yours now.
Yeah. And I told her, I said, no, that's actually quite flattering that somebody's, you know, stealing my scented stones at an event. I said, that's, you know, huge flattery. So I said, you keep them and we'll talk. And she said, great. My company, we want to have, you know, these scents in our office too. So let's talk. And
That's awesome.
Turned out to be okay. But it was definitely one of those fun moments of, you know, where your product is ending up.
Yeah. Well, you could have a special line of urinal cakes now. So I mean, in the men's bathroom.
Oh my gosh. So Darren, did you get those new underwear stones? I sure did. Gosh. Never smelled better, buddy. Oh gosh. So,
well, yeah.
So
one of the other things, hair oil that you'd use.
All right. So Ashley, one of the other things we want to talk to you about. So you started this business online, you launched your website, you start launching more products. You're growing into the place you're at now. Well, you also got yourself into physical retail too.
I did, yeah.
So when did you decide that I need to be in some stores?
You know, early on, I kind of realized, what the hell am I thinking trying to be an e-commerce fragrance brand? Because, you know, people can't smell your shit. So what are you going to do? Like, how are you supposed to sell this to people when they have no idea what it smells like? Right. And so I realized, okay, my go-to here is going to need to be A, having a sampler pack on my website so people can order it and at least try the products, you know, before they invest in a larger bottle of anything. But B, more importantly, I need to get this in front of people, because once they do smell most of our fragrances, you know, they fall in love like I did. And so I started by just literally boots on the ground, walking into, you know, different boutiques and people that I had connections with, different salons, gift shops, anybody that I, you know, if I knew anybody at them, I would walk in and say, I need you to do me a solid and at least hear me out on, you know, carrying this product. And it worked. I mean, you know, getting it in front of the buyers and the managers and everything of those retail places. Just carrying the samples in and letting them smell it. They were like, you know, our customers will go for this for sure. So
that's awesome.
That's how it started.
So how much did that complicate your business?
Not too bad. That's really where I wanted to go with the business, was as much wholesale as possible. And that was, and then, you know, COVID hit and
thanks COVID.
That put a damper
fucking
on all
asshole.
Kinds of things.
Might as well put my yoga pants back on. Not going out for a while.
Yeah. So, you know, everything shut down. What the hell am I supposed to do now? And I kind of realized that I was going to have to, you know, amp up our e-commerce even more and our online marketing and all of that. So I continued to push that side of things. That's when I, you know, brought on my marketing team and everything and pushed that side of things. But with this idea that as soon as things start to open back up, you know, wholesale is going to be where I go back to. And so it has been, you know, I've started to go back to those stores and say, you know, okay, we talked about this before, either you started to carry the product or you were about to, or, you know, you saw how well they sold when you did have it, like, let's keep going with this. And, I get pretty good, you know, feedback from doing that, just, you know, in person. Takes time for sure to do it that way. But I think that, you know, once you use them as kind of a case study and say, look, I have this boutique that, you know, goes through my beard oil like crazy. You know, people come in, they smell it, they buy it. And you know, you need to have something like this in there too. And so it helps to, you know, get your foot in the door in a few places so that you can continue to kind of use that feedback from those owners to get your foot in the door in others.
Now, did you know much about retail? And gaining shelf space before you said, I think I need to go into retail spaces.
No.
So it's probably a big learning curve too, hasn't it? Because it's like, I mean, you're not talking about dollar per square foot. You're talking about generating dollars per inch.
Yep.
You know, it's square inch, and it's how do you, one, get whatever it might be, give me 12 square inches of shelf space here. And then how do you maintain that?
And then pricing and the incentives you're going to do.
And then gaining more shelf space as time goes on. I mean, you look at a grocery store and it's like all the stuff way down on the bottom shelf and they've got like two little rows and it's like they're in and they got to be proud. So it's like, how do you move up and expand? So what have you learned so far when you've going into the retail side of the business there? Or as you said, the wholesale side of retail.
Yeah. One of the biggest things that I've noticed is that people, especially for something like this, people don't necessarily go into places looking for this, but it's an excellent impulse buy. And yeah. So I encourage, you know, my retailers to have it by the checkout, you know, the cash wrap if they can, with the testers open and sitting there, because as people are paying, they'll pick it up and smell it and go, you know, whoa, throw one of these in too. And so that's one of the things that I really encourage. I always give a tester with, you know, whenever whenever my wholesale companies or whenever my retailers make a purchase, mm-hmm. I make sure to give them a tester, because that's obviously the most important thing, is, you know, letting people try it out. And education, a little bit of education goes a long way, to, you know, either a sign next to the product in some of these, you know, smaller spaces that will allow me to do that. Because whenever, as soon as you say, you know, that these are, you know, natural fragrance oils imported from Egypt, hand bottled in Florida, you know, people are intrigued by that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it takes a little bit of education sometimes, you know, in educating the associates, store associates as well. So that they know how to talk about it, you know, because if somebody says, what is this? And they're like, I don't know, you roll it on, you know, that's not going to get you anywhere. And so you really gotta make sure that, you know, you at least send a little bit of education with the products. And I've learned that's a big part of it, is making sure that people know how to talk about the products and know what it is that they're selling.
Yeah.
A side question. The papyrus oil.
Papyrus.
Papyrus oil, I know.
For sake's sake.
Left the vowel out. Is there something unique about the quality of that oil in itself that sets it aside? And I can't remember. I think because you've presented this before on a different event that I do. And I think you mentioned something about the compound and the way it breaks down, and there's not like a sticky oil residue or something with it.
Yeah, it's kind of a dry oil. So it's not a very sticky, oily oil. Whenever you put it on the skin, it rubs into the skin nicely, mm-hmm. But doesn't leave the skin greasy. And that's the same with like our hair oil. We made sure that we, you know, combined other oils with the papyrus that, again, wouldn't feel greasy, because nobody wants greasy, oily hair. They just want, you know, the moisturizing benefits that come from those oils and the scent that comes from those oils. So I do make sure, you know, I've had conversations with that perfumery in Egypt to make sure that, you know, the products are organic, that they're cruelty free, that they are, you know, cold pressed oils, which mm-hmm. is the most important way to do it. Because if you use any type of heat to press the oils, a lot of times you kind of break apart the compounds in there, and they won't smell right. They won't last as long. They sure. won't get as many benefits from it, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you do have to make sure that, you know, depending on what you're using it for and everything, that your oils are coming from a good source.
Well, if you go back to your chemistry days when you're, you know, balancing equations, heat changes chemistry, right?
Yep.
So yeah. Remember that, Darren? Yeah. I mean, that 120 years ago when you were in school?
I was just figuring out how to sneak out Bunsen burners out of the classroom and do whatever else I could. So,
why do you have a pocket full of beakers? I don't really know. I
have no idea. And is your... not beaker again. Please not today.
I couldn't help it.
Did you ever find your tour guide again and pay him like a finder's fee for what he did for you?
You know, I haven't, and I've thought about it for a while. It's going to take me some time to like dig back through and figure out how to get in touch with him. Because I was, you know, put in touch with him through somebody else while I was there and that kind of thing. But mm-hmm. it's definitely, because I obviously plan on going back to Egypt in the near future to go visit the perfumery again. You know, I want to take my boyfriend over there to experience Egypt too, since I talk about it so much. And there's still more there that I would like to do and see. And so I definitely, if I ever go back, I have promised myself that I will for sure get in touch with him and, you know, have him be our guide again. And surprise him and let him know that I, you know, created this entire company of his little, hey, you want to go to a perfumery suggestion?
I have a little prediction here. Like 10 years from now, you're going to be a well-known premium brand mm-hmm. and you're going to track this guy down on Facebook. Like, hey dude, I got a $1 million finder's fee check here. I've been trying to find it for years, buddy. Find
WhatsApp, text him.
I'm rich. Woo!
That's it. Ship this check to BFE. So what's on the horizon now? I mean, you're gaining now that COVID's lifting, you're gaining more retail space. Yeah.
Can I ask a question about that? Yeah. Just because if you don't want to answer, you don't have to, but right now your business, how much of that business is coming from retail versus your online presence?
So I would say, that about a third actually comes from pop-up events that we do.
Okay.
Because we do a lot of, you know, like outdoor markets or pop-up events at other stores stores that carry our products. We'll go to a pop-up event there to help promote it. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of business, you know, with those types of events. And then I would say, you know, more than a third comes from our online business, and then a little less than a third comes from our wholesale.
Wow. So this is real. I'm glad that this is actually going to prove a point that I wanted to make. That's fantastic. And I got to imagine if I were to ask you, you'd probably say we've only scratched the surface on retail.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's so much opportunity because I'm sure you probably started local, expand out regional, but you know, the world is your oyster. There's so many salons and boutiques across the country. They're nothing but growth opportunity. But we've talked to a lot of people. I know a lot of people. They've got a little business. They're selling t-shirts or coffee or whatever their product is. And they've set up a website. They've set up Shopify or Wix or whatever. And they're like, hey, I'm selling my products online. How long have you been doing a retail thing? A year?
About a year and a half.
So a year and a half. And now you can contribute almost 2/3 of your business to your physical presence.
Yes.
Which is insane to me. So yeah. I think so many people look at like online, well, that's the future. That's where people are buying. That's the business opportunity.
Yeah.
You can, I mean, I've heard people say, one of the most ignorant phrases I hear people say is that retail is dead. When you're putting somebody say retail is dead, I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind? Drive around anywhere. There's retail all over the goddamn place.
Yep.
Yes, Amazon's huge. And I'm not happy about how much they've grown over the past year because they didn't earn it. It was forced on people.
Yeah.
It was forced on the public, and that's a whole different topic.
Do you have do you have a shop on Amazon?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's one place I don't want to go because I want to continue to be a luxury brand. And to me, Amazon is, you know, where you order batteries that you don't feel like going out to, you know, drive to go get yourself. Like, I don't want to, you know, that's not where I want to find. That's not where I shop, you know, to get things that I'm trying to add to my life.
You just went up a notch in our book. Thank you very much. But seriously, retail is not dead. Go anywhere except LA, because LA is fucked. Go anywhere in the country and or anywhere in the world. Retail's everywhere.
Yeah.
Shopping. Yes, sometimes you're right. You go on, I don't have batteries, I don't want to go to the store, put it in the cart, whatever.
Right.
But shopping's an experience.
Yep.
Now, I do have another question for you. And this is going back to your branding and marketing, because now there are all those, influencers out there, right? Use my product, use this. Is there anyone that is using your product out there on social media? That's the first half. And the second half is there anyone that you would like to be using your product to be a spokesperson for you out there on social media or in the public?
I have used, you know, quote unquote influencers in the past. Mm-hmm. I have used micro influencers and I have used one very, very large influencer.
And how'd that pay off?
What was that?
How'd that work out? Did you see an uptick in sales or anything by using those people? Or was it just like, oh God, that just shit the bed with that one?
I mean, shockingly, the return on micro influencers isn't all that different than on a larger influencer. Hmm. And I'm not going to say that that's, you know, going to be the case with everybody. I mean, it totally depends. But I just think that unless you have another platform other than just being a quote unquote influencer, I think that people are starting to realize that influencers just get paid to promote things.
Mm-hmm.
And that it may not necessarily, you know, be something that they actually use. So I'm pretty,
I use Anakin beard oil because I like you. You use it or I'll bite your fucking ear off. I mean, seriously. Yeah. Mike, you shaved. Oh, fuck it. I don't care.
Yeah. See, that's the kind of person I could use. Like, that's a good one.
I got connections. I can help you out.
Yeah. No, I really, for me, it's more of a, you know, getting in touch with authentic people that aren't necessarily influencers, but that have influence over other people.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm a huge just admirer of Kristen Cavallari for her business sense, because she went from being kind of a, you know, teen reality TV show star kind of thing to marrying a football player and everything. But she really, you know, created her own business and has done very well with it because she had a following and because, you know, she had influence over people without simply being an influencer.
Right.
And so I really respect her business because of that. And so I would always love the opportunity to, you know, work with her.
Well, I'm sure she's one of our listeners for the podcast. So she'll be contacting
Law
you.
Law of averages, she's got to be. is Iron Mike.
Call me, girl.
I wish they'd stop making fun of my voice. This is bullshit.
Mike, give me a call.
The micro versus macro influencers really didn't pay off as well as you thought.
Yeah, just because I've realized that, you know, I want kind of an authentic, hey, I use this product and I like it. Not, hey, I was paid to promote this product.
How about a Playboy Playmate? Would you take one of those
as an influencer? I've thought about it because it's a very sexy scent. So I'm just saying that it's, you know, if you look at our Instagram, it's a sexy Instagram account.
There we go.
We have a connection there. I could help you out.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually interesting because I've had this conversation with people before, and I really there's a benefit to influencers, but nothing. I mean, so many people try to think that technology has changed the world. Things are still the same. Nothing beats a referral from somebody you trust,
right?
Exactly.
And that's the biggest influencer you can have is a happy client that goes on Facebook and is like, dude, you need to try this papyrus oil. It's dope.
Yep. That's where the majority of, you know, my customers continue to come from is just recommendations, you know, referrals from other customers. I often will send out, you know, in somebody's order, I'll pop in an extra little sample of papyrus and tell them to please share it with a friend. Because anytime anybody shares anything or tags us and says, you know, I love this stuff. And, we share all of our reviews on our website and everything, because that's one of the things that just makes my heart flutter is getting, you know, seeing people's reviews of our products. And, that to me means more than paying an influencer to use our products. You know, it's having connections with people that makes the difference.
So on the retail side, how many states do you have retail connections or have retail relationships with right now?
So, at this exact moment, we're only in Florida, but we do have connections with, a store in Atlanta and one out in Texas that we are talking to,
You haven't scratched the surface. This is huge.
No.
Yeah, no,
these were places that we were going to get into before the pandemic started, and then the pandemic hit and they closed their doors. And so, currently we are only, I'm trying to think just to make sure I'm saying that correctly, but I'm pretty sure currently we are only in, Florida. Now I say that, and I do sell our products online wholesale. Sure. On a wholesale website. So there could be other companies that have purchased our products that I'm just not thinking of, you know, that are beyond our borders that I'm not thinking of. And I have a company that's about to start selling it in Brazil.
Wow.
So
be careful with those reais. They, fluctuate a bit. Brazilian currency, not exactly stable.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you what, I really think you're onto something here.
Yeah.
With your products. I'm interested. I'm like, I think I'm going to just get the sample packed.
I can't wait to put some papyrus oil on my wife. Might, stoke some marital things.
Go read the reviews. You'll see one from a husband.
And that's what I'm getting at. I mean, there years ago, I remember being at a party, a dinner party, and this woman walked by. And I don't know what she was wearing. I did find out afterwards what she was wearing. And it was like I was like a freaking deer in rut season. I was just like, I have no idea really who you are, but you need to stay away from me because all of a sudden I'm just going absolutely crazy. It was just like the fragrance she had on, and I was like, I've never had this sensation before in my life in this aspect from scent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you put a good sub in front of me, I'm going to go crazy over that.
But Darren, put your pants back on. It's a fucking sandwich.
Sorry, seriously. They brought me a fresh lobster roll. I couldn't help it. But yeah, I mean, if your papyrus oil has that aphrodisiac effect on people.
Yeah. But,
yeah, I get it.
That's pretty awesome.
That's why people keep coming back. You know, I have a lot of repeat customers.
Sex life's never been better. Do you do auto fulfillment? Because just send it to me every month.
Feel like the spritzer guy at when you're going through the department store. You're mm-hmm. you're doing that to your wife as she's walking out the door each morning.
Did you put this on yet? So Ashley, your website is anikitluxury.com.
It is.
So how do you spell Anikit?
A-N-U-K-E-T.
Okay. So for those of you that are like Darren and too drunk to remember that, it's going to be in the show notes.
I just got my Uber, so I'm good.
Yes, you got to ride home. So just look in the show notes, whatever podcast app you're looking for, you'll see a link to it. You definitely need to check it out. I know I'm ordering some because I'm pretty excited.
Hey, if you're interested and you're listening, you have a boutique or some other shop
reach out
to, or the scent event, I guess. I don't know what else to call it. I didn't pick up on it. But if you want to have a nice scent at your event, reach out to Ashley as well.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, Ashley, man, this has been awesome. I'm glad you came on the show and told us about your story. You're going to be one of those that I want to check in with in the future to see how things are going, because there's a couple things about your story that just I love. I love the fact that, you know, this just happened because, you know, you're floating down the Nile. I mean, how many small business stories start this way? You're floating down the Nile River. And
mine didn't.
You know what? Now that you think about it, mine didn't either. But it's awesome because opportunity just happened to fall in your lap. Mm-hmm. But what you've done is you've recognized it and you've executed on it. And for those that might be listening, I don't care who you are. That's not easy, but you recognized it and you went for it. And I'm impressed. I'm impressed by what you're doing. I think you've got a great story. And I like the fact that you have stayed true to your brand and your positioning, your very premium product, a luxury product. Mm-hmm. Don't sell it down the river.
See what I did there? I get that. Oh,
gosh. I'm full of puns.
Oh, God. I'm getting sick of my belly.
Actually, it made me nauseous just saying it, so I probably shouldn't do that again.
Well, you're a Buccaneers fan, right? So you live in Tampa. You're a Buccaneers fan.
Hey. Just because I live here now,
just because you steal quarterbacks, no big deal.
Getting mad at me.
No, but what I'm saying is, you could have a Super Bowl champion who has his sixth ring on, and his wife be wearing your product, and they could be out there being spokespeople for Anikit Luxury.
I mean, sooner or later, the police are going to figure out that I'm the one riding my bicycle back and forth in front of Tom Brady's house every night. So,
well, you should leave a bottle of your papyrus oil in his mailbox.
Put this on your wife and call me, bro. All right. Awesome. Well, congratulations on your business. I'm excited for you. I'm glad you came on and told us your story. For you, our subscribers, our listeners, go check it out. It sounds really, I'm going to buy some. I'm even going to put some beard oil on. I've never done that before. Do you think I should oil my beard?
I've used some already before I shaved and grown it back again. And I'm not thrilled with the product because it is.
You use that Amazon shit. You need to use a luxury
oily
brand.
And yeah, I do need a luxury brand. So I'm getting some of that too.
Yeah.
Yep. You need a dry oil.
And the beard comb.
We got you.
Yeah, the beard comb to go with it, right?
Yes, as well, with the beard comb, that way you can comb it through. Men need to take better care of these beards, man. I'm telling you out there.
Yeah.
Some of them are looking rough. You got to take care of that.
You've seen Darren, haven't you?
Hmm.
Hey, if you need a beard model, we actually know a really good, one.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I like it.
Yeah. Well, Ashley, congratulations. Thanks for coming on. This has been really fascinating. Folks, make sure you support her business. Go buy some stuff. Don't buy that oily beard oil. It's dumb.
Buy the good dry stuff.
Well, folks, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
See you.